Welcome to the Goalie Hacks Podcast, the show dedicated to providing elite tips, hacks, and strategies to take your game to the next level, where we help you become an elite goaltender, one hack at a time. And now, here's your host, Mike Santaguida.
All right, bang, bang, welcome back to the Goalie Hacks Podcast. Your boy, Mike Santaguida here. Hope everyone had a great weekend. Hope y'all got your holiday shopping in and locked in some deals on this Black Friday. Happy Thanksgiving to all my American friends. And I know you guys were busy doing some shopping, so we wanted to give you a little break from the ads here at Goalie Hacks. You know, we're not desperate to sell anything, and we know you guys are probably getting discounts jammed down your throat. But, you know, look ahead a little bit. We'll be doing some discounts after Christmas. So just keep your eyes and ears peeled to see what we got cooking after the holidays. And this week on the show, I have the owner and founder of KD Goaltending, one of the largest goaltending schools in the greater Metro Detroit area, Kevin Delamarter. And we dive into his personal playing experience, his coaching philosophy, some hot goaltending topics, and what separates his elite students from his amateur kids. And we discuss how exactly you goalies can get to the next level faster. And I loved having Kevin on. Great guy, very well spoken. And I know you guys are going to enjoy this episode, so make sure to stick around all the way to the end. And shout out to all my patrons, the people that support my work for some sick extra perks, including private monthly mentorship, Zoom sessions, private group chat access, priority and quicker access to communication via the private group chat app, 1v1 phone calls, video review, live in-person analysis, private sessions, list goes on, and we are constantly adding value. Thinking about adding a new Patreon-only private podcast feed as well, so every week you'll get a regular episode. And if you're a patron, you'll have access to this private audio feed of weekly motivation or something along those lines. That's coming soon. But if you're interested in catapulting your development and working much closer with me and joining our 19 other members, head to patreon.com/goaliehacks or the link in the show description as well to check out all the details on how to get started ASAP. Shout out to our other sponsor, NeuroTracker. And if you guys are looking to get an edge with the most scientifically proven brain training tool in high performance sports, and if you're interested in joining 25 other members to catapult your development in your game forward and get an edge over the competition where really, you know, most people aren't looking right now, then simply head to the NeuroTracker link in the show description to get more information and to get started right away on the software. You'll get access to Goalie Hacks exclusive programs, private group chat for members only where we compete monthly and share scores, as well as program access as often as you want, wherever you want, to have total accessibility of the software and have an opportunity to get better, you know, whenever, wherever you go or wherever you are. So head to the links in the show description or in my Instagram bio to get started today. But without further ado, let's jump into this week's conversation. I know you're going to love the chat Kevin and I had today. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Goalie Hacks Podcast. And I am pumped to be joined today by a leader in the online goalie community, none other than Kevin Delamarter with KD Goaltending. And after playing college hockey for Ferris State University from 2006 to 2011, he then went on to become a goaltending coach, moving to the Metro Detroit area, where he founded KD Goaltending and now operates one of the biggest goalie schools in the region, coaching goaltenders from minor hockey all the way up to junior in college. And as I mentioned earlier, he's very well known and respected in the online goalie community, and I just couldn't be happier to have him on the show today to chat some goalie development. Kevin, how you doing, man? Thanks for coming on the show, buddy.
I'm doing well, Mike. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, right on. Great to have you on. And, you know, when I first came online, I saw your goaltending school pop up all over the place. And then I actually saw your account got blocked or something like that a while back. And,
you know, I relive that.
I knew if something happened, if like that happened to me, I'd hope like people kind of step up and help me out. So have you kind of been able to recover from that?
Yeah, it's kind of 2020 in a nutshell, I guess. It was right around the start of when COVID really started shutting things down. And one evening I was home and I just posted, I think, a picture or video of one of the goalies I work with, and instantly it was your account's been disabled for violating terms and conditions. I'm like, okay. And relied on a lot of different people that reached out to me with some advice on trying to how to get it back. And yeah, a few months later, I was able to recover it. In the meantime, I started a second page. And
did you recover it?
I did recover it, and then
no way, I didn't know that. So
one day, all of a sudden, it appeared, and then about a month ago, my new account got disabled 3 different times in about a week and a half.
Oh my goodness!
But I got pretty good at getting it recovered quickly. So if you have any issues with that, I think I'm your guy.
Okay. Hopefully I don't end up in the same boat. My heart would drop, honestly, man.
Yeah, it was funny too, because I was like 10 followers short of 5,000 that night. And a little bit of like a milestone follower count, but whatever. It is what it is.
Well, you got to have, so you're, the other account's up and running it then. You don't use it much anymore?
Yeah, well, it's kind of weird. I tried to figure out what I was going to do, because I started another one and that kind of took off, and a couple thousand followers were following that. And I was just regularly posting content to that one. And then all of a sudden my old one reappeared one day. And so which one do I use? And the website I operate was updated to use the live feed for my videos with the new Instagram account. So instead of going back and having everything rewritten again, I decided, well, I'll just move forward with the new one and use the other one as a backup.
Yeah. Well, glad things have, I didn't know actually that you got the other account back. So glad things have shaped up. Hopefully I don't run into the same issues, but anybody listening, maybe Kevin's your guy, so hit him up if you're having some issues. But maybe we can just jump in to COVID a little bit. How's training and everything been with your goalies and in the region you're in?
Yeah, right now everything's pretty much operating as it would at this time of the year. MHSAA, the Michigan High School Athletic Association, starts high school hockey November 1st. Yeah. So right now, pretty much all the high school teams are going. AAA has been going. Everything's pretty much off and running. Private lessons, everything I do there is going well. The biggest thing for me has been, as we discussed before, is there's usually a clear-cut line in the end of August to beginning of September where everybody junior leaves for their training camps, people leave for college, and you're kind of left with the kids that are here playing AAA and other, you know, youth hockey. And their availability is mostly in the evenings and weekends. And because of the online learning and the virtual classes and everything there, I've had a lot more one-on-one or semi-private training than I've been doing during the daytime. So on that side, it's been nice, because I've really been probably averaging about 30 some hours on the ice every week.
Nice.
And that's up a little bit than what I was doing before COVID hit, which was about 25 or so a week on average.
Yeah.
So it's helped me on that side of things. But the flip side, you know, you might have a team that you're scheduled to go on the ice with to work with their goalies, and you get a call that they have a parent on the team that tested positive and they're on a 10-day shutdown. So it's very fluid right now, where you might be having to adjust your schedule on the fly, and you got to be very cautious when you're out there wearing a mask on the ice, making sure that, you know, in a goalie, I don't think it's too difficult, especially if you only have one or two goalies on the ice. You kind of typically keep your distance at least at 6 feet. So
yeah,
that side of it's just trying to be mindful of that. And then as far as the personal life, you're definitely limiting what you're doing. So you can go to work and you can hopefully keep everything going in the right direction. So,
yeah, well, we were kind of discussing too, you know, kind of probably a backlog of those hours is, you know, a lot of displacement right now with kids looking for teams, and kids kind of, you know, a huge trickle effect going on. You know, even at the pro level, there's so many teams that have kind of shut down, right, that they're not going to go this year. And then you're getting this, it happened to me in 12, 13, when I was trying to make the transition to junior, where you had the NHL lockout. So you basically had all of these pro guys go over to the European leagues, and then all these rookies who thought they were going to go there end up back in junior hockey. And then you're even seeing guys ending up, it's going all the way down to the minor hockey level. Like, I know kids where junior goalies have recently been released and they're coming back into AAA hockey, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, it's happening at both sides, to your point. You know, you have guys that are still junior eligible that may have played their freshman year already this past season, NCAA D1, and they're going to go back this year, and they're currently playing in a junior league because they're still eligible to play. And so that's obviously eating up a roster spot. And then you have, to your point, the guys that, you know, might be U18 eligible at a AAA level, and would have had a chance at a, you know, a null or a tier one, maybe even, and instead, because the population's a little bit larger right now for the junior pool, kids are being forced back down. They're going to U18 and then kids that might've had those spots are, you know, finding their other avenues, whether it's a high school team or maybe even tier two. So it's really interesting to see. And then there's even, you know, a small amount of the population of people that, you know, don't have a team at all because there's just not room for them.
Yeah.
So having those guys, you know, it's really interesting to work on their mental side of their game too, to keep them positive, because they might be in a situation where they're training like a free agent. They don't know what's next, but they also have this window of opportunity that isn't going to stay open for long. And, you know, their motivation is, you know, hopefully things can kind of open back up. Hopefully the borders open up a little bit more so they can get to a team in Canada from the States.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's, you know, they get a chance because another team had a goalie come up with COVID or a player come up with COVID and they have spots available and somebody gets a chance to show themselves. So, you know, it's a little bit of an interesting dynamic that none of us have really dealt with before. So I think we're all learning on the fly, but the biggest thing that I think we can do is just try to find a way to put a positive spin on it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think everybody's going to have to, you know, buckle down and really kind of get ready for, I guess, a bit of a storm here. Cause this is easily turning into probably one of the weirdest years in hockey ever. And, you know, we got to kind of roll with the punches a little bit, whatever happens. Cause it sounds like COVID's starting to spike a bit again. So everybody just got to be safe, obviously, you know, and respect when you get called off or something like that. It's happened to almost everybody now, to be honest, at some point or another. So everybody's kind of dealing with it. So just kind of stay strong out there, I guess, right?
Yeah, you know, you have those games that, especially early in the season, you know, it's one of your first games, you're getting excited for it, like at the junior level, or maybe it's, you know, at AAA or whatever it is. And all of a sudden the day before the game, you find out that those games are canceled for the weekend. So it's kind of a roller coaster. I'm trying to make sure, you know, the message is clear to everybody is you gotta kind of brace yourself and prepare for more of when it happens, not if it happens mentality.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really throw you into a tailspin if it does happen to you. So
yeah. Well, some advice out there, everybody, just kind of roll with the punches, and obviously good luck to you and your students with, you know, being safe and getting the season underway and hopefully getting some games under their belt. But you know, maybe we can just jump right in a bit here and maybe you can just start off, you know, by briefly sharing your story and your background and sort of, you know, how we got to where we are today.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm born and raised in Michigan. I grew up about an hour and a half, hour 45 minutes west of Detroit. So I played pretty much all my youth hockey here. Played a mixture of high school and AAA in my teens. And then basically the route I took, I mean, hindsight's 20/20. You can always look back and wish you would have made a couple different changes and different decisions around the course of your playing career. And, you know, when I looked at it, I thought that my best route when I was getting closer to the end of my high school time was to go to Ferris State, which is a college I ended up graduating with a business degree. And I played with their ACHA team, which was a good fit for me. The college was a place that was a couple hours away from home. Mm-hmm. It was the right college setting in the right kind of town. It wasn't too large of campus. And it was they were in a rebuilding year for their ACHA team. We had 18 freshmen my freshman year. So it was, you know, there was a lot of upside to coming in there and they were pulling in players from junior leagues like the Knoll. And we actually had a NCAA D1 kid transfer into our school and ended up playing for our team. We had a couple NCAA D3 guys. So they were bringing in some guys at the right time where, you know, I felt like this would be a good opportunity for me to continue to play.
Yeah.
And also kind of get going with my education. And move that ball forward in that court. And then after I was in school for a couple of years. I took a summer job coaching goalies for a school out of Rochester, New York, and got to travel to a different city every week for my whole summer vacation, which was kind of an ideal situation because we would talk to the rinks as soon as we'd get in town and they would give us some extra ice. So me and a few of the other guys were pretty much all college guys or junior guys, and we would go train and then run the camp during the week. And so it was a really interesting dynamic there, and it allowed me to really put on a different hat in hockey, which was not just the playing, but the coaching side of it. And I carried that with me after I graduated. When I moved to the Detroit area, I started coaching more on the side, and I started to realize quickly what, you know, obviously Detroit's a big hockey market, but there was a big demand for specialized training in hockey here too, whether it's goalie coaching, skills coaches for players, and so forth. And slowly but surely, I got into it more and more. And over the years, it took off to the point where I had basically two full-time jobs and had to make a decision one day, which route was I going to go? Was I going to continue to use my business degree in account management? Or was I going to, you know, pursue being a full-time goalie coach? And it was a really tough decision, but at the same time, a really easy decision, because when you're at your one job, constantly thinking about your other, you know where your heart is. And So I made that decision to go full speed ahead with the goalie coaching, and it's been going strong for the company's been established for about 3 years, and I've been doing this full time for about two. And it's really grown leaps and bounds, and I've made a lot of good connections along the way, and it's been pretty rewarding, because since I started doing it here in Detroit in about 2011, there's kids that still trained with me that I was trained with back then that are now playing NCAA hockey or going into junior. So you're seeing them really accomplish their goals, and it's been really fun so far. And that's pretty much where I'm at today.
Yeah. Well, why don't we start off by, you know, having you kind of dive in a bit into your coaching philosophy. You know, what are some of the major areas that you focus on with your goaltenders, and why do you believe in these concepts so much?
Yeah. One of the things you'll see that right when you go to my website is it says every goalie is unique. And it's something I really believe. I mean, if you look at the best goalies in the world, if you want to call it the starter on every NHL team, you know, you're not going to see exact comparisons to each and every one of them. They're all going to have something kind of unique to how they play, to their size, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So one of my main things is to not try to coach like a cookie cutter position. You know, the end goal is the same. It's to be in position. It's to control the shots, control the rebounds, make saves. But, you know, there's a few different ways to do it. So definitely taking a very personalized approach with every goalie I work with. And as far as the fundamentals that are in place, I think a big one is you just got to have a strong foundation. It's what you're going to always rely on. You know, in a big critical game, or if you're in a slump, it's something you can immediately fall back to. And you can build your game on top of that foundation as far as you want to take it. And, you know, I just kind of use it as an analogy of a house. You know, you can have the design to build the nicest house, but if you slack on the foundation, eventually that house is going to crumble and fail. Right. So that's kind of the philosophy we take. And you know, I build it basically, that foundation is made up of really strong skating. There's always time. Every time you're on the ice with me, you know you're going to start out with skating drills, and they're not just going to be meaningless skating drills. A lot of them are skating drills that immediately are going to be used in the drills you're using that day for your shooting drills. So you're getting all your footwork in, you're finding your spots in the crease, you know where you need to be, you know how everything needs to work. And then, you know, just getting to your spot, controlling the shot, reading the release, pretty much just being on top of everything you need to and controlling everything you can. And that's where I feel like at that point, if you put those things in place, the sky's the limit for your development.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've actually seen, you know, on your page, a lot of skating drills, and they kind of really push that boundary a little bit in terms of, you know, how comfortable people are. You know, why do you kind of do some, a little more unconventional stuff with like pucks and a lot more recoveries? Like, why do you think it's so important to really push people's feet outside of that comfort zone?
Yeah, I mean, there's a saying, you know, be comfortable being uncomfortable, right? And I think it's important. I mean, hockey is a sport where it's not like football where you're running set plays every single play, right? You're out there and you know, you can anticipate what's going to happen. You got to be able to read the plays, especially at the higher levels, to be successful. But we also know things can change in the blink of an eye. You know, a puck changes direction, you get run into, something happens where all of a sudden that spot that you were trying to get to or you should be at, you're away from it. And you got to have the ability to recover without hesitation, without thinking. You know, you can't process, oh man, I'm out of the position here. What do I do to get back? You just have to do it. And when you're really strong on your edges and really comfortable, not just in your crease, but around your crease, and you're not just dominant in one side of your game, but everything is pretty well balanced. You know, you're going to find yourself not scrambling in those moments. You're going to get back to your spot. You're going to have, you know, a lot more confidence in your game to be able to make the saves you need to. And if you get in a position where you can't, you're going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then pertaining to positioning, you know, what are some of the core concepts that you teach to your guys? Like, how do you get that idea of position across to them?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where definitely always try to tell everybody, just get to your spot, right? You got to know where your spot is. Obviously, if you can anticipate, you know, you're taking soft looks when you can, you're reading zone entries, you have a better idea of what's going to happen next. And when we go through our skating drills and stuff, you know, keep your head up, know where your spot is, you know, make sure that you're understanding why you're moving from here to there and how you're going to make that movement, and then do it with consistency. And then as far as their stance goes, you know, making sure that they're in a good, comfortable stance that works for them, but also to the shooter's perspective, it's doing everything it should. It's taking away all the right spots in the net. It's making the shooter think a little bit more on where to shoot, maybe have to eat up a little bit more time. It's a pretty neutral based stance where you can shift into saves. You can pivot cleanly. You can build up a lot of power quickly in a push. Mm-hmm. So getting to your spot and allowing yourself to maintain that control within your body.
Yeah. And then you also mentioned reading the release. Maybe you can dive in a bit to, you know, how you kind of get that idea across to your guys and how you kind of teach them and develop that skill.
Yeah, it really comes down to patience, right? You see it a lot of times, especially at younger goalies, where, you know, they see the top hand push forward on the stick of the shooter, and all of a sudden they're widening their stance or getting ready to drop or already dropping. And, you know, what that does tell me is they're reading things correctly, but they're reading things and not having their body commit at the right time. Right. So it's just being overly patient. Sometimes you got to, if you're struggling with something and you're going down early every time, you know, I'll say, let's flip the script on it. And I want you to stay up as long as you can, like until you're uncomfortable. Yeah. And I want you to really just focus on seeing that puck come off the stick blade, almost to the point where you're watching snow come off the blade with it. And you're getting more dialed into seeing how that puck is going at you. And then, you know, making sure that you're kind of looking at it like the net has quadrants to it. High left, high right, low left, low right. And as soon as that shot's coming off of the stick, you're trying to determine, you know, where exactly that shot's placed and which quadrant is it going into and how you're going to move your body into that quadrant to make the most controlled save possible. One of the struggles, you know, I see is you get into the younger age groups at, you know, like a tier two or even a tier one at AAA, where they're 12 years old, and you got some kids who have really figured out how to use a technology and a stick as far as the players go to have a quick release. And
right.
You have other kids where the sticks, you know, it doesn't matter what stick they have, the puck's kind of just fluttering off their stick. And that really throws off goalies a lot too, because they're getting such an inconsistent shot coming at them. So for them at that age, it's really tough, but it's also trying to make sure that they understand what they're trying to accomplish and that there's usually more time than they give themselves. And once they start to, you know, get that habit built up and break the old habit of dropping early and reading the wrong things, you really start to see their confidence grow and how they're able to react to the shots.
Yeah, I guess for goalies that maybe, you know, they try and go into those waters and then they feel uncomfortable kind of staying up longer or whatever it may be. How do you help them kind of break through that uncomfortability?
Yeah, it's a lot of it's repetition. You know, it's you tell them to, you know, it's I worked with a goalie today that's a AAA goalie here in the Detroit area, and he's a 08 goalie. So really good kid, really athletic, really smart, very coachable. But that was one of the main things that we had today was be patient. I want you to read everything. I want you to read every bit of the release, you know, and I don't want you dropping any bit earlier than when I actually shoot that puck. Mm-hmm. And it was just a lot of repetition. And the first probably 20 minutes of it was just frustration, you know, of him constantly having to redo a drill, constantly having to redo a shot. Yeah. You know, and then testing them a little bit, you know, you kind of get them in a rhythm where, okay, they're starting to get it. They're expecting, and then you can kind of tell though, they're starting to expect that shot at a certain point. So Then as you shoot, you hold it just for that split second and make sure they're really being honest with themselves to hold a good neutral stance. And by the end of today, I mean, the kid left extremely confident and going through video on it, looking at how he's adjusting it. You can go frame by frame, how we can really see how he's shifting his weight, how his stance is changing. And when the goalie gets to see that and in the time of the lesson and make the immediate changes, that's the biggest one. So just a lot of repetition, making sure that they're learning, they see themselves doing it. And eventually you break down that old habit.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, you kind of brought up how, you know, sometimes it can be a little emotional trying to learn new concepts and stuff like that. And I guess for goalies listening out there who kind of maybe struggle with that side a little bit, you know, that when they're trying new things, they get a little frustrated with it. What's some advice that you have for them that kind of stick with the process?
Yeah. I mean, you gotta expect when you're trying to make big changes to your game, there's going to be times it's going to be frustrating. It's not going to be the easiest process. And so you got to go into it open-minded. You almost have to welcome the frustration, knowing it's going to come, but don't let it affect you from buying into the process and buying into what you're trying to get in practice. And then the next thing is, you know, we can spend 50 minutes on it in a private session or a semi-private session working on that stuff. But, you know, it's, if you start to see the results and the buy-in's working and it's starting to click, you know, you can't wait until you see me 5 days later, 2 weeks later, whatever it is, and then try to continue on. You have to hold yourself accountable, even if you're a younger kid, to make sure every time you're on the ice after that, you're taking what we worked on and you're applying it every single time. So you really can build on it. And it's going to help that process move along a lot quicker. The frustration will go away a lot sooner as long as that kid's totally in on it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I also, you know, I mentioned earlier you played college hockey at Fair State in the ACHA conference. Yeah. But maybe you can just detail, you know, what the hardest part was for you transitioning from juniors and minor hockey to college hockey.
Yeah, so I think, you know, just in general, when you look at college, one of the dynamics you're going to have is, you know, now you're in school and you're balancing two main priorities. You have your education and your classes, and then you're there to perform as a student athlete. And you got to make sure that you're on top of both because they go hand in hand. And so you have to have a lot of discipline. You have to go in with a plan. You kind of can't go in and say you're going to figure it out on the fly. Yeah. So talking with people who have already been there, getting information from people who have already done it, and trying to formulate a plan that, you know, you might have to adjust as you go on, you know, depending on classes you're taking, depending on how the season's going and so forth. But try to have a plan in place that you can live by. And so you never really feel like you're behind. You know what you're getting yourself into. You know how you need to operate. And it allows you to manage that lifestyle a lot better. And then as it comes to the hockey itself, you know, you're continuously climbing the pyramid. And so as you get into college, you're likely going to be paired, speaking goalie here specifically, with one, most likely two other goalies who are probably going to be some of your best goalie partners you've ever had, depending on, you know, where you played your AAA and junior level hockey.
Right.
And for some of these guys, you know, just like anywhere, as you climb the pyramid, a few people aren't going to make it to the next step. And some of these guys are really trying everything they have because they might be in their senior year and you might be a freshman coming into that situation. And, you know, you got to be respectful to the people who put their time in, but you also have to put your time in. And you got to make sure that if you find yourself as a freshman, or even if you're a sophomore or so, and, you know, somebody comes in or somebody's been there before you, And you're not getting all the games that you're hoping for. And it is a limited schedule. You don't have 60 games, 70 games, right? You only have so many that you get to prove yourself, that you constantly do keep yourself ready. And when you do get the stage and it's yours, you make the most of it, because there's only one first impression you get, and you got to make sure that, you know, you're prepared for it.
Yeah. And I guess for goalies that, you know, seem to make that transition to college hockey much more smoothly, you know, in your opinion, what do you see as sort of the underlying theme or characteristic in those guys who seem to experience success, you know, just time and time again?
Yeah, they have a good foundation. Their hard work doesn't just show on the ice. It shows in their pregame preparation. It shows on how they handle themselves on their off-ice training. You know, it's how consistent they are and how confident they are in themselves.
Yeah.
You see that the guys that excel and the girls that excel, they come in there and they have open ears and open eyes. They're ready to be coached. They're ready to listen. They're not coming in with an attitude of, okay, now I'm here, give me the net. You know, they're there and they're ready to work. And if they do experience a bump in the road, they don't let it derail them. They have a good foundation that they can fall back to, and they believe in it. They trust it. And it usually allows them to soften those bumps and move forward quicker.
Yeah, I like how you kind of say, you know, they have that foundation, and you mentioned it earlier in the episode of how everybody's different, right? Like, you can't really take a cookie cutter approach to goaltending. I don't really believe that either. But in terms of developing something like that, developing what we often on the times call like some type of system or some type of foundation that you find works for you, like even a repetition based foundation that you alluded to earlier that you can kind of rely on when you're not doing well, stuff like that, right? We hit a bump in the road. You don't just abandon ship. You know, what's some advice in terms of how people can start developing that and figuring out their identity and figuring out themselves?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, the one thing is I tell a lot of younger goalies, you know, the goalies that are 12, 13, 14, and especially the ones that you see, you know, that are really in love with the sport. They're in it for all the right reasons. They're really working at it. Is you see these videos more so than ever before with how social media and the coverage is on teams like in the NHL and so forth, of all the off-ice stuff that these goalies and players and athletes do and everything they do before a game to prepare. And I said, you know, you're telling me your goal is you want to be an NCAA goaltender someday, or you want to play pro hockey. You know, when do you start developing what works for you? When do you start figuring that out? You don't wait until you've accomplished that goal and now you are at the NCAA level or you're the pro. You start it right away, just like you start your on-ice stuff.
Yeah.
And you have to find things that work for you. You can't be afraid to try something and say, you know what, I didn't really feel like that made me any more focused. And, you know, you try it a few times, and if it's not clicking for you, then try something else. I'm sure if you were to ask every single goalie that's a starter in the NHL what their pregame routine is, they're all going to have their own method that they've developed themselves, whether it's what they do before the game, what they do during a game, how they keep their concentration and focus. That stuff didn't happen by chance. They're constantly fine tuning it until they find what works. And then they have that consistent system that they know how to rely on. So I think it starts at a young age, and it's got to be something that you put your own ingredients into, and it's your recipe for success.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, I was, you know, once you kind of build a bit of a foundation in terms of like things you like to do during the week on the ice and off the ice and a pregame, you know what I mean? Over the years, you kind of tinker one thing here, one thing there, little things here and there, and you kind of keep building that out to make the system more efficient as you get older, as the level of play gets harder, as, you know, your identity might be molding to something a little bit differently than what you were before, right?
Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, you can't get yourself stuck in a rut. Like if you're doing something and all of a sudden your pregame routine is taking you like 2-3 hours, right? It's almost too much time. It's more time spent doing that than the game. Then, you know, you might have gotten a little carried away from it, but you don't really want to put a time limit on it. You need to really just find if it's something you're doing that really makes you feel consistent getting ready for the game, consistent getting ready for warmups, then you're going to go into warmups. You're going to go into the first period feeling more consistent. So you definitely have to have whatever that is that you find that works for you. it's got to be done consistently. So you put yourself in that mindset. Your body feels like it's already gone through the same things it goes through every game. Your mind's gone through the same things it goes through every game before you get on the ice. So once you hit the ice for warmups in that first period, you're already in a consistent state of mind. Your body's ready. You're not trying to change it up, whether you're at a home game or an away game, or first game in an upper league. You know, it's you rely on that system.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't have said it any better. That's really like when you get to college, when you get to junior, you know, you need some type of system to be successful at those levels, right?
Absolutely. And
that's kind of the goal of minor hockey, right? Is minor hockey, you're really kind of trying to mold, figure out yourself, what's your identity, what works for you? Because it's not the end of the world, really, if you play minor hockey and you don't win hockey games, right? But at the junior level, the college level, obviously, it's a bit more of a business, right? There's a lot more on the line, and there's a lot of bodies that kind of come in and out. And, you know, you want to have some type of foundation you can rely on when you get there, because it can be a little nerve-wracking, right?
Yeah, it can, you know, and, you know, you might find yourself, you know, and I know you know people that's happened to. I know people that's happened to where, you know, you do get into a game, regardless if it goes exactly how you're hoping or if it goes south on you. You know, that might have been something that you were waiting a month into the season to get the ice time, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, you get that game, and regardless of how you feel it went, you might not get another one for another month or two. And it's really easy to start doubting yourself in that, you know. But if you really have a system that's worked for you at the previous levels, and you allow yourself to believe in it, and, you know, you just got to stay true to it. You got to stay confident with yourself, so when you do get that next opportunity, you know, you're ready to go again. And if you have to adjust your system a little bit as you see fit, don't be afraid to try it. I mean, we as athletes, we're always going to be learning. We're always going to be evolving as any game, as any position grows. And it's no different to how we need to treat the off ice side of it. You know, whether it's how we train, how we go through mobility classes and stuff like that, how we train our mind. It's just as important, especially in a position such as goaltending, where there is a heavy mental aspect to it.
Yeah. Enormous. I guess pertaining to your personal career, if you could go back and give yourself some advice before you went to college, what's something you wish you knew, you know, now that you wish you knew then?
Oh man, that's a long list of things probably. where to begin? You know, I guess for me, I'll be very honest. You know, I thought I was better at times than really where I was, or sometimes I had too much confidence where I thought I knew the way it needed to be done, and I didn't really want to hear anything else because I thought it worked, but really it was right in front of me that there are better options, there are things you got to do. So it wasn't that I wasn't coachable, but I was very strong in believing my way of how I did things, because for most levels of hockey where I did play, it worked. And when I got into college, I was one of three goalies. I was a freshman along with another one. And then there was a senior on the team that had been there at school for the 4 years. So obviously that was the person that I knew I was going to have to battle against, in a sense, to get playing time.
Right.
And it wasn't going to be handed over to me. And he was a great guy, you know, somebody who we got along with great. And it took time for me to be able to really get in the net. And I got a little impatient at times, kind of got away from, you know, if you want to call it my systems. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I kind of found myself getting back into it and being a little bit more open-minded, talking with some of the teammates, you know, seeking out more information. And, you know, let's just stick to your guns on this one. And when your time comes, make the most of it. And I was able to do so. And, you know, from there, it worked really well. But I think you got to go into things knowing that just because you've had success, even if it's been the most success you could have earned at the level you were at prior to where you're at now, you can't think that you're going to automatically be in a spot to immediately be successful without any glitches in the way.
Right. Adversity.
So for me, it was just, you know, go into it, and I probably could have had a better start if I would have had that mindset a little bit earlier in my freshman year.
Yeah, no, good advice. And I know you also work with obviously minor hockey and junior goalies as well. But you know, what do you think's the hardest part for most amateur goalies trying to make that transition to juniors?
Yeah, I mean, it's once you're in the junior realm, you're really in most cases you are experiencing. Sorry, I got a couple dogs here at my house that every once in a while get a little loud, so I apologize for that.
I'm sure we got some dog fans in the audience. We won't edit that out.
Yeah, so sorry about that. But no, I think, you know, for most of them, it's the first big time away from home, you know, and that alone is kind of a shock to your system, because you don't have that comfort zone that you've had for the first 14, 15, 16, 17 years of your life.
Right.
You know, where this is where you've been at. This is, you know, you come home, you see your family, you have meals for you. You know, these are your friends you see away from the rink. So you gotta prepare yourself just for that aspect of it alone to make sure that that doesn't disrupt what you need to do when it's time to perform, time to train, and so forth for the team. So making that jump, that's something that, you know, we've seen it where that alone has kind of derailed some people's opportunities to move forward with their career.
It's crazy. Well, I mean, it's natural, you know, I just think in general, everybody, it's always tough, you know, getting outside your comfort zone. I mean, I moved away from home when I was, you know, I was planning on it when I was 16 and it didn't work out. And then when I was 17, I came to the States and crazy culture shock, but boy, do you grow up quick from the experience.
Yeah. If you can brace yourself for it, you're going to gain so much experience, you know, in and outside of hockey. So it's one of those things where that's obviously one thing. And the other thing is, you know, it's going to be a faster pace of play. You get into the junior realms. You've most likely prior to that been on a team where you earn your roster spot and then you're the goalie for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
You know, you're not worried about another kid coming in and taking your spot or being moved to another team or a lesser league.
Right.
So there's other things that come into play that can, throw you off your game, throw you off your plan and your training if you're not ready to understand that that's now the environment that you're in and there's more at stake. So you do have to go into it with a plan. You can't go into it and then be like, okay, now I'm here. I've made it through training camp. I've earned myself a roster spot. Now what do I do? Now what's my system? Yeah. So you have to have those safeguards in place. So if you do, again, you know, as I said before, hit that bump in the road, that system, that reset button, whatever you want to call it, is what you can rely on to continue to move you forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess, you know, for goalies looking to make that transition to junior hockey in the near future, you brought up speed, obviously. But what's maybe the most important skill you think they need to start developing to make that transition much more smooth?
Ability to read plays. You know, at that point, you should have your technical game in pretty good check. Obviously, you're always going to be fine-tuning it, always going to be improving it. But, you know, getting into that level, you know, you hopefully have put the time into your foundation, to your skating, where you can, when it's time to play at a faster speed, you're able to do it. You have that next gear ready for you. But no matter how fast you are, no matter how good you are getting to spots, if you can't read plays and anticipate, then you're going to find yourself outside looking in really quick. And I think a lot of goalies can get one-dimensional in their training where they're really just focused on themselves or really just focused on more the technical side and watching them. And they get away from watching film that the teams have, you know, from your games, you know, doing your homework that's available to you against for your competition, where you get to better understand what their tendencies are, you know, how they set up in power plays, how they enter the zone, what one line might do compared to another line, and how you can anticipate that better. So you really have to put your work in. So when you're there, once you're playing in the game, it's not like you're in a foreign territory. You kind of expect things to happen. You can anticipate clear, and then you can do your job more consistently.
Yeah. I like how you said, reading the play. It really is. In my opinion too, I think that's just a huge variable that, you know, you can kind of get away with when you play minor hockey, but in junior, because that pace picks up, you got to kind of be ahead of the play a little bit. But kind of with you and your guys, like, it's obviously a hard question to answer, but I kind of want to dive into it a bit, if you don't mind, is how do you kind of develop, you know, that reading the play and kind of just being that student of the game so you can figure out where the puck's going to be next before it gets there?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you try to talk through the drills a little bit. Obviously, you know, you got to do a lot of learning through the drills, but you set something up. So say we're doing a drill for zone entry on a situation where maybe it's, you know, an odd man rush or whatever it might be. You kind of pick up what the forward tendencies are, you know, what F2 is doing, what F3 is doing. You know what their options can be. You know what the guy entering the zone, you really have an idea of what their options are going to be. And then from there, you can kind of anticipate that pass. If forward two's driving into the net hard and pushing the D back, you know, and forward three is going to hang high in the zone or however they might handle it, you know, you can kind of expect that play to happen and you can adjust your depth. You can be ready to hit that spot as soon as it's there. And mm-hmm. also just simple things like, especially if it's a drill, I might throw a goalie in and I don't tell him anything like that. And I only talk to the shooters and I say, shooters, like this, I want you to do one of three things. And all the goalie knows is that they're going to be coming in on zone entry and you have to read it. And I can see what their tendencies are and seeing if they're taking soft looks, see right. if they have tunnel vision to the puck or see if they can pick up on things quickly. And sometimes I might tell the shooters, hey, I want you to do the same thing three times in a row. And I want to see if the goalie can actually do that three times in a row and pick up on it. Or if they get beat the first time, do they self-correct the second time or the third time, or do they not pick up on that? And then we talk about it. So there's a lot of different ways you can go through it, but you definitely need to make sure that they're open to what the play is going to be, what the options are, and they can start to formulate things much easier.
Yeah. I really liked how you articulated that. That's you know, having the goalie, he doesn't really know and he's got to kind of figure it out. You know, you slowly, that's how you build that repertoire of reading cues, really, body language, positioning on the ice, stick positioning, everything like that. Right.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do a bit of, you know, I think I've only done it on one other episode so far, but we're going to do like a rapid fire is what it is. And I don't know if you looked at it in the show notes beforehand, but basically I'm going to rattle off a bunch of questions and then you pick either or out of the two answers, or if you feel, you know, compelled, you can pick something else you believe in, but,
okay.
You know, I like if, you know, don't give me any cop outs. You know what I mean?
All right. Just give you the answer. No explanation behind it.
Yeah. What we'll do is we'll dive into an explanation after if anything kind of sparks your interest. Okay.
All right, let's do it.
All right. First one is wide or neutral stance, talking about foot position.
Neutral stance.
Hands projected forward off your body or hands to the side?
Forward off your body.
Straight or curved T pushes?
Curved T pushes.
Okay. you saw that you posted about that one, eh?
Did I get brownie points there?
You know what? There's no right or wrong. It's more about I just like to have the conversation. I think the conversation around it should be healthy, right? Whether you believe one or the other. And that's kind of why I like to dive into these things is really to, you know, and even the post with the curve or T-push thing, it was really to show people the spectrum of opinions on it, really. It was not necessarily that one or the other is right. It's to show people that, hey, like, Look how wide the spectrum of opinions really was in the comment section for that, right?
Right, so, right, yeah, for sure.
I just think that's healthy. So, upright or super crouched back position in your stance?
More upright, but depending on the situation, we can get into that one later.
Yeah. I see. People have been asking me this about Connor Hellebuck. They say, is it okay to have your stick off the ice?
Well, I mean, I want to say no, but when you win a Vezina trophy, it's working for you. So it's going to be a little bit tough to argue that one, maybe, but we can talk about that one a little later too, maybe.
Okay. Should you challenge or stay deep on point shots with traffic? Yes or no?
Challenge to a degree. It's got to be relevant to the play around you.
Okay.
So maybe that's a good discussion.
Yeah, I think they're all, we could probably spend a while on each, right? Should you look under or over through screens?
Yeah, let's go with over.
Should goalies be active and play the puck as much as possible, yes or no?
Yes, in the right situations.
And when goalies play the puck, should they put their glove hand over or under their stick?
Whatever is going to give you the most control over the puck, I would say over. I switched from being under and then eventually went to over and fell in love with it. So we'll go with over.
Yeah. Nice. Nice. So why don't we dive into, what's one that sparks your interest? We'd love to hear it.
Hands. Let's start with that one. So okay. Hands for me, big believer in obviously the box control. You know, having your hands set in your peripheral vision, you know, a lot, especially on deeper shots, you know, have a little bit more distance between you and the shooter. You know, you're just projecting your hands out. You're making them that much bigger, just like you do on a bigger scale with your whole body when you challenge right out of the net. To track into your hands, it's just less rotation that you have to do. It's less room for the puck to elevate up towards a crossbar, towards a post, wherever it's being directed towards. I think it just makes for a much cleaner save, you know, when that shot's out. And then really what I tell the goalie is set a frame with your hands, you know, make sure that you have a good, strong hand positioning. And if that shot's inside your frame, like inside your thumbs, that's when you're looking to bring your hands in and seal and shift into that shot and center your body to it if you can. So there's really no seams or holes where that puck can get through. And like if it's outside those hands, that's where you kind of fill that quadrant it's being shot to, and you shift into it, you drive into it, and support that glove or blocker with your shoulders, with your core.
Yeah, I mean, you were probably in the era where they're teaching everybody the windmill, right?
Oh, yeah. That was with the two pad stack.
Oh, yeah, there you go. I mean, I
hated myself there a little bit now.
Well, people are bringing the two pad, the they call the butter slides or butter stacks. Is that what they're called?
Oh, yeah.
Where they're doing the two pad stack slides across the crease. I'm like, oh my goodness, they're working too.
Hey, the game's always evolving. So sometimes you got to dig deep into the history of it to find something to bring it back. We haven't started training the two pad stack again, though. So
no, I haven't either. Falling behind. Yeah, I know, but pertaining to the hands, I everything you said, I totally agree with it personally. I talk about this concept a lot, and I'm a big believer in kind of the box control theory as well. IQ goalie actually punctured a hole in the box control theory because he said that the puck could actually curve from like a certain distance away. He says the cut, sure. And you know what? And I will say this from experience, that there have been shots that I've faced where I'm like, it just kind of like finds its way around you, and it seems like a clear sighted shot, you know?
Yeah.
And you're kind of left wondering like, man, like what just happened? You know what I mean? And you kind of feel like it curved a little bit. And I think maybe it's because sometimes the puck gets chopped a little bit the way it's shot off the stick. So
yeah,
the box control theory, he put a hole in it saying it's not totally foolproof. But yeah, to be honest, I've structured so much of my game around that theory that 95 to 99% of the time you're going to be within the bounds of the regular trajectory of a puck, right? So
yeah, you're hitting that one with, you know, and to your point, you know, I mean, you can have the same argument about RVH or holding your edges and so forth. You know, why do goalies do it? You know, when you know you're giving up a top corner and you're kind of making yourself vulnerable, but it's what you gain against what you lose, you know. And, you know, what you're taking away by being in that RVH, or what you're taking away for this conversation about having your hands projected out a little bit more, probably far surpasses that shot that every once in a while doesn't come off the stick clean, or, you know, is a long shot that has a little bit of downwards or side to side curve to it.
Yeah. Yeah. What about straighter curve T pushes? Why do you think curved?
Yeah, this one's kind of tough. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm one and not the other. I think it's depending on the situation. I think for the longest time I was really on the side of straight, and then kind of tried to open my mind a little bit more to the curved T pushes. And I don't know. I mean, if some of my goalies that are going to listen to this are probably going to be like, why did you answer curved? You know, it just depends on the situation, I guess,
totally.
Where you're moving to, how far you're moving across laterally, the depth of the shot, you know, can you get across in a straight T push just as quick and maintain good depth? Or does having that curved T push allow you to kind of get more to your spot, you know, in a quicker way? And then, you know, how do the mechanics of your leg work? You know, if you're using a T push because it's a distance you have to use to get across and you want to maintain your edges, you want to stay on your feet, you know, you got to make sure that your toes and hips, everything's closing back to your normal stance.
Yeah.
So if that shot comes quicker, then you get a chance to fully set your feet. You know, is that heel turning back around and your toe turning back out where you can release without being completely open? And
right.
You know, I'm kind of looking at that now of, you know, does a curved T push allow you to close up everything a little bit quicker? So even if you don't have the exact depth, you're able to still make a more controlled save.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of the big theory behind it is, you know, getting coverage, I guess, before you get depth.
Yeah.
And there have been some guys I spoke to, they're like, yeah, at the NHL level, if you come out through the middle and you give that guy both sides, like, you're toast. Right.
Right. But,
And then there's some other guys that say, you know what, because you're using a straight push, you're covering the short side more, you're forcing him to the outside of your body.
Right.
But, you know, and I'm obviously on sort of the curved T push side, but I think people maybe take a little, you know, not to kind of get out of context of like, how much are you really like curving? It's not very much.
Right. That's a thing. It's not like you're making massive swoops through the crease.
Yeah. Know? Like it's very shallow, but it just, yeah. I just find, from a visual standpoint, when you open up your eyes before you even move and take that push, right, you're seeing where you want to go to. And then, and I just remember so many points throughout my career. I really kind of clung to this concept personally, and I found that a lot of success with it, and I stuck to it, right? But I found that when you were wrong about where you needed to go, or the guy cuts in, right? Because at that next level too, you know what I mean? That one look off the puck, or even in your peripheral, the shift can happen in a quarter second. A guy could change his body positioning, right?
Absolutely.
Could cut into the middle or whatever it is. So what I found was, if I'm taking a bit of a more of a neutral route, I guess is even I would call it, right, rather than a straight to this point, it allowed me to pull up or go a little bit further across if I was kind of wrong. And I just found that it really, really helped my positioning. Like, it just really helped me be center all the time, because I was taking that depth last, so I could basically kind of delay it or pull it up sooner and get center, right? Wherever
right.
I need to stop to. So, you know, that's kind of my idea behind it.
Yeah. When we're covering topics that are either, if you want to go specific to the straighter curve T push or maybe some other things too, there's a lot of other things that we could come up with to have this discussion about. But, you know, what I tell a lot of my goalies is, guys, like, let's try a little bit of everything, and let's find what works for you, because, you know, logic can be applied to it, but, you know, depending on how that goalie's, where their strengths are at, how they play, how quick they are and everything. I mean, they might find that they're good at both, but they prefer one over the other. And,
yeah.
And so you can't be too narrow-minded in these things. It's good to try a little bit of everything and give it an honest effort. And now the goalie has a little bit more confidence in what they're doing and which one they choose to use, that it's going to be, that they've tried both, and they're kind of letting their body and mind decide that, hey, this is the one that I feel I get there better. I feel more in control. I'm having more success with it. This is the one I'm going to go with. And when we get into a conversation like that with goalies, I try to have that mindset, because I'd rather not leave them wondering, like, oh, I wonder if we would have tried this today instead.
Right.
What would
right.
my results be? Let's mix them both in. And then let's see what we have the most success with. Let's look at it on video, and we can come to a real understanding and agreement of, this seems to be the one that works for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's briefly dive into the Hellebuck, the stick. You said, probably
yeah.
no, even though he won the Vezina. I would say the same thing.
Yeah.
But why would you say no?
I think, you know, he's high, he's tall, you know, he's taken away a lot of what the shooter sees. When he does that, he's trying to fill a net, you see stuff somewhat similarly to, not quite to that degree of the stick, but with like Vasilevskiy, he's kind of big and tall in his stance. And right when the shooter's getting ready to shoot, he kind of settles down into his stance and gets a little bit more prepared for the save.
It's like they want to project their hands more, right?
Right.
Like that's what it looks like, at least.
Yeah. And I have a goalie I work with who, you know, is a senior in high school, and this has been something that we butted heads with a lot over the last couple of years because he does it a lot, and he's a good goalie who, you know, it's when I see him doing it, I really try to expose him in other areas, like getting him beat five hole and stuff, because I really want to make sure if that's what he's going to do, that he knows what he's given up and that he can still guard against that. Yeah. And so for me, it's, you know, if it works for you, and in the, you know, how the saying goes, if it's not broken, don't try to fix it.
Right.
I kind of look at it that way. I think it's something to be open-minded about, but overall my philosophy is to try to be a little bit more set, a little bit more consistent. Don't try to have a lot of moving parts right at the time of the release. Try to be in a more controlled position, more level plane of sight. So when that shot is actually taken, everything is in its known position. No holes could open up or close in the wrong spots. And it allows you for more consistent control over the shot.
Yeah. Challenge or stay deep on point shots with traffic. You said depends on the situation. Why don't you elaborate a little bit?
Yeah. So if you have traffic in front and there's not much threat, or your team is doing a good job covering to the sides, like the backdoor side areas where, you know, if that puck gets tipped or it goes off of you or ricochets, whatever happens and ends up right to your side, you don't want to have a ton of lateral movement to your left or right to try to get back to that post that you don't have the time to make up.
Right.
So I think, you know, if everything's contained and it's a shot through the slot and there's really no quick immediate people there right on the side on the door, you know, backdoor area to slam it home, you can give a little bit more depth to it. You can get out a little bit more aggressively and cut down the angle and give the puck less room to work if it does hit something and redirect.
Yeah.
But if you are sensing, you know, maybe it's a penalty kill situation where your team's outnumbered, there's somebody getting in behind you, you need to try to keep that player more in your peripheral vision and more in an area where you can achieve both things. You can take away the net and control the area through the initial shot. And then if that puck does get over there, intended or unintended, over to somebody on the side, that you have a fighting chance to get to it with some control.
Yeah. No, that's a very well articulated, and honestly, exactly the way I would approach it. I would think, you know, for me, I kind of, I would say I challenge a lot more than most guys. But one thing that I work on a lot is something that I refer to as depth speed, which is, you know, a conversation that isn't had very often, I don't think, right?
Right. You know,
just because I'm a bit of a smaller guy, I was kind of forced, like, how do you play bigger, right? And it's this idea we talked about with, and it kind of, you know, revolves around that idea of box control of, you know, if you understand the box, right, in certain positions. Well, what if you got closer to the puck, right? Well, you can play bigger. If you get closer to the puck, that's kind of the same idea with your hand. So I started playing around with this concept of, you know, how far out can I actually come,
right?
You know, when there's traffic and stuff like that. And I'm very kind of reserved. Like if the puck's at the far blue, like in the corner of the blue line, like I won't necessarily come out then. It's when the guy starts walking to the middle of the ice. Right. And at the same time, you do have to be mindful of some of those backdoor threats, right? You know, but my idea was, you know, if I can come out, well, then I kind of, because, you know, that things just happen, right? Broken plays, sticks, bodies, tips, right? So it's tough to just say, yeah, you're going to react to it. And that kind of helped me, I would say, like transition to junior and to kind of that next level, was like understanding, one, my identity, right? Was if I wanted to play like this to not get scored on from like point shots and tips, which was something that, you know, people were obviously looking out for a smaller guy, right? Can you get over that? And then if I wanted to play like that, I was going to need to be able to get back to my crease quickly in case there was a broken play or something went back door, right? So that's kind of my approach to it, is I've been a little more aggressive on the challenging side when appropriate, when the guy starts walking in the middle of the ice. to make sure that if it does go off something, it just hits me. Right. But then then molding that identity a little bit to just be faster on that, being able to get back or to a back door or something like that. Cause, you know, in juniors and stuff like that, you get roasted if you can't do that.
Yeah, for sure. And it's one of those things too, where you do have to be realistic about, you know, it size does come into play there. You know, a 6'5" against a 5'6" goalie are going to be able to play that differently.
Way different for sure.
Yeah. And it, you know, same thing to your question about, look over look under their screens. And, that's the same thing. I mean, if you have a really tall frame where looking over just makes all the sense, cause it's closer to your normal stance. That's the way that you should play it. And, you know, if you're a smaller guy, looking over might put you on your tiptoes and lock your knees and put you in a non-mobile position where, you know, you kind of have to find what's going to work for you through that. When we're working on screen stuff, one of the things, you know, some of the pointers I try to give everybody, regardless of if they're a tall body that can look over or if they're I'll just say average, because at this point, average size people seem to be the undersized goalies, right? And like if you're average or you know, below average in height, you know, what you have to see through those screens all is the same. You need to see where the puck is. You need to see the release. So if you don't get to see the puck the whole way in, at least you know where that puck was shot from, when it was shot, and you have a better idea of where that puck should be getting to and at what speed that puck should be getting there. You know, so, you know, whatever is going to give you that ability to really see through that screen, control your stance and positioning as much as possible and obtain that information, you're going to be set to make a much better save than if you're left guessing.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I want to kind of dive into, you know, some of your work with Carter McPhail. And I've seen him on your page a bit and he's, you know, I saw he's experienced some great success in his first couple of years at Ferris State. But in your opinion, what sort of separates him from everybody else in terms of his character or skill set?
Yeah, so Carter's got a really unique story, which probably helps if we're going to bring him up. I started working with Carter when he was playing in one of his last couple of years before he would age out in youth hockey at U18.
Yeah.
And he was always a double-A goalie. And it wasn't until his very last year of U18 eligibility he was able to get a spot with the Little Caesars AAA organization.
Wow. Nice.
And and he was at a point, like almost at a crossroads of not even going to that skate. Wow. He had some other people that are close to him and have been close to him in his development. Carter's a great kid who, you know, has people that he works with, such as myself, Rob Liddell, and a few other coaches. He takes a ton of knowledge that he can get and uses it all to his benefit. He doesn't just try to hear one voice. And, you know, in this case, he had the right people pulling for him and that believed in him. And he went to that skate and earned a spot. And as things went that year, you know, he was able to get opportunities, whether it was, you know, how he thought things would come or not. He made the most of his opportunities and in doing so was able to take Caesars on to, you know, a state championship. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, he's getting pulled out of a national tournament game and going and driving to his first null game after playing two periods of a game and leaving. You know, it's something along that. Carter might be able to correct me a little bit more on exactly how that game shaped up, but he basically started a game knowing he wasn't going to finish it because he's going to have to get off the ice and leave to go play in a null game. And ended up going and pitching a shutout in his very first start. And then, you know, if you're somebody in that mindset, that at that age, you can take that a number of different ways. And you know, you went from not being a AAA goalie to being a championship AAA goalie to going to the null and getting a shutout in your first game, thinking like, okay, sky's the limit, right? And your road's going to be a lot easier paved than it was in your previous years. But that was quite the opposite for him. You know, he went and he didn't make a team that first year in the null. He had 2 years of junior eligibility left and he ended up playing for the Sioux Eagles in the NOJ and put up some really good numbers in that junior league and really just kind of lit it on fire. And And from there, he earned an opportunity for his final year of junior eligibility to play for Johnstown in the NAHL. And he came in and he wasn't handed the job by any means. He had some ups and downs early in his career, early in the season where, you know, he finally got a couple games and things were feeling good. And then he had a game where it wasn't the best performance, you know, wasn't horrible, but wasn't the best. And all of a sudden he's back to wondering when he's going to dress to even just be a backup and when he's going to get his next time, you know, when he's one of three goalies on a team. And as things played out, he kept working. He does what Carter does. You know, he doesn't let anything get in his way. He uses everything as a way that's going to fuel his fire rather than put it out. And once he got another opportunity, he basically took it as his own and never let anybody else in on that. And he was able to break the wins record for his team in Johnstown. And they had an extremely good team, an extremely good season his last year junior, and was able to earn himself an opportunity to now play NCAA Division I hockey at Ferris State University. So he's in his sophomore year there now, and they're just getting their season underway. And, you know, the thing that I can say that Carter does really well and is Carter focuses on his skating. Carter focuses on stuff a lot. Carter was the only goalie who called me this summer and said, I want to do a full session of nothing but skating. No pucks. I want to work on my edges. I want to skate. He gets excited for that stuff that most people try to be like, oh, let's just get the pucks out and start shooting.
Yeah.
You know, but he knows that, you know, Carter's not 6'4". Carter's 5'10", 5'11". And he knows that playing in that, he has to have the best edge control he possibly can. He has to have the most power and the most ability to get to his spots consistently. And he needs to be on top of his shots and on top of his reads so he can read the play, read the release, and control the shot and control the rebound. So he knows what he is. He doesn't let things get in his way. He pushes forward. He's got a very determined mindset where he's one of those kids, you know, or I should say young adults now, that you always got to understand that you can't count them out. And he's walking proof of that. And it's great to have a goalie like that to train because it keeps me on my toes, right? You know, you have somebody who's constantly looking how to gain another level in their game, constantly looking how to gain the competitive edge. And, you know, it's refreshing for me because it constantly makes me evaluate what we're doing. And is this the best for Carter? Is this the best for your game? Is it going to move you to the next level? Mm-hmm. And I know him working with other coaches, like I said, he trains a lot in the summer with me and Rob Liddell. And he also works with Carl Popper. And him and Carl have a great relationship, as him and Rob do too. And it's great to see that he tries to take in as much information as he can and find ways to use it all to his benefit.
So I guess for goalies looking to develop some of those skills, you know, and I guess pertaining to the part you said about he loves doing the skating. You know, it's enjoying it. It kind of relates to that of like, you got to enjoy the grind a little bit of like doing the work, you know, is going to make you better, but not necessarily the work that everybody else wants to do. It's why he's probably at that level. Right.
Right. It really is. You know, I mean, it's something, like I said, when I got to meet Carter and start working with him and he was playing tier two hockey here in the Detroit area, you know, when he's 16, 17 years old before he moved on to Caesars for his final year. I mean, he didn't make it at Caesars and then say, okay, now I got to start working on my skating. He was a kid who worked on it a lot then. And it's such a foundational piece to everybody's game. You really have to put the work in. It's really hard to find a goalie who's been extremely successful at higher levels of hockey that don't have that in their skill set. And for him, he doesn't get satisfied with just being known as a stronger goalie on his edges, but he continuously refines it, continuously works at it. He keeps himself sharp at it. And, you know, with that, he has confidence that wherever the play puts him, he's going to be able to manage that. He's going to be able to move to where he needs to. He's going to be able to, even in a less than ideal situation, compete on the puck.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess finally, you know, I was wondering if you can maybe share like two hacks with us, you know, that you implement with your goaltenders that's helped them time and time again, stay ahead of the competition and find success.
Yeah. I mean, one of them I'm going to say is, you know, to touch on what we just talked about was the skating, you know, put the work into the less glamorous stuff of the game. You know, you need to make sure that that is a foundational piece for every shot you take. You know, you're making 10, 15, 20 some moves on your skates and your crease, you know, and it adds up. And if you can be very consistent with your skating, very strong on your skates, you're automatically going to put yourself in an advantage to be able to get where you need to go as quick as possible. And then the other one is don't blend in. You know, when you're a goalie trying to fight for the number one spot or trying to fight to be noticed and to get yourself a roster spot on a team at whatever level you are, you got to really be honest with yourself and make sure that you're doing everything you can, that if anybody's watching, that you're not the one blending in, that you're standing out, that you're, you're outworking everybody. You're on top of everything that you need to in your game. You're listening when the coach is talking. You're doing everything that gains attention. And if you allow yourself not to blend in and you allow yourself to kind of be the benchmark that everybody else is trying to keep up with, you position yourself extremely well. And I think that's something that people need to try to do and not get comfortable with where they're at. You know, you're constantly trying to achieve more. And if you keep that mindset, you're going to open up a lot more avenues for your game to go.
Yeah, pertaining to you know, skating, and I kind of alluded to it earlier that, you know, some of the skating that you do with your guys, it revolves around moving around pucks and being a little unconventional. So what's maybe, when it comes to skating, something that you've sort of developed with your guys that you find works really well in terms of style of drill or what they're doing or whatever it is?
Sure. Yeah, the thing is usually we'll do if I put you through kind of the format for a typical training session, whatever the pointers or the main points are that we're working on that day. We'll do some movements at the beginning that are just going to loosen you up, some box drills, some lateral movements, you know, using the blue lines or red lines, using the circles, stuff like that, that just kind of gets you moving, feeling your edges, you know, whether you're doing down pushes or lateral releases or T pushes or anything like that, you know, just really gets your body going. And then typically we'll move from there to the crease and structure in our skating drills a little bit more, where a lot of it is stuff that you're going to see for the next few shooting drills. So whatever we're really focusing on that day, you're going through all the crease pattern, all the skating you're going to be expected to do once we introduce the pucks to it. But your focus is on making sure you're getting to your spots, making sure you're feeling consistent on your feet, making sure that everything's checked where you can really put your concentration there. And then when we introduce the pucks to the drill, you're doing the same movements, hitting the same spots, but now you can really focus on reading the release, reading the play, and know that you already put your work into your skating. So you should already have that box checked. And we are allowed to see a lot of progression by doing it that way. So that's a big part of how I structure things. And I see a lot of positive results because of how goalies are able to put their attention into one thing or a couple things at a time.
Yeah. It really helps build that subconscious muscle memory, right?
Exactly.
Nice. Yeah. Well, Kevin, do you have any last words of advice for everyone listening that you feel passionate about sharing?
No, I mean, just overall, I would say, you know, wherever you find yourself at, you know, whether you're a goalie playing, trying to make it to the next level right now, if you're somebody who just thoroughly enjoys the position and the game, or if you're just a fan of the sport, you know, it's really just put your mind to something and give it your all. You know, you see so many times that a small bump in the road can really throw somebody off, and just really have defined goals, whatever it is you're trying to accomplish, really know what those goals are and go to work with it, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise. Ultimately, whatever choices you make, you got to live with them for the rest of your life. So when you look back at hockey or whatever it is, you know, in a few years, make sure that you look back at it knowing that you gave it your all, because you'll be able to live with that. But if you look back at it and say, man, if I would have done something a little bit different, if I would have applied myself a little bit more, if I would have been a little bit more open-minded, where would I be now? And so don't leave yourself hanging like that. You know, you want to make sure that you dedicate everything you can to something you're determined to do. And whatever the outcome is, you'll be fine with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Coach Del Mar, thank you for coming on, buddy. Appreciate your insight, and love diving into some very hot topics, I guess we'll call them. But you know, I think everyone's going to love, just the insight and the personal hacks today. So I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time. So cheers, man. Can you just let people know where they can get in touch with you online?
Yeah, for sure. If you go to my website, kdgoaltending.com, my email's there. It's info@kdgoaltending.com. And you can also follow me on Instagram. I'm typically pretty active there on a daily basis. It's @kdgoaltending. So if you give that a follow, I appreciate it. And if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out.
Yeah, so go check out Kevin Delamarter on Instagram. At KD Goaltending, and his school and his students have experienced plenty of success in recent memory and has grown into one of the largest goaltending schools in the greater Detroit metro area now. So maybe somewhere down the road, we have you back on the show, man, if that's something that interests you.
Oh, absolutely. This has been a lot of fun, and definitely always up for more goalie talk. So just let me know.
Well, cheers, man. I'm grateful for you. Come on, buddy. Good luck with everything going forward. You take care, stay safe, and we'll chat soon, man.
Same to you. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode, guys. If you like what you heard today, make sure to hit that subscribe button, as we have tons of amazing guests lined up already to come on to the show in the next few months. And make sure to tune in next week and every Tuesday from now on at 8 a.m. is next week. I have another active professional goaltender coming on the show. Division One, Penn State Big Ten champion and alumni, and he just recently signed with the Colorado Eagles, one of the best teams in the American League, Peyton Jones. And we had some trouble scheduling to get Peyton in to record, and I mentioned his name probably about a month ago. But this episode turned out amazing nonetheless. He's an absolute stud who's had a tons of success at the next level. I love his attitude, his approach to the game, and, you know, finally glad to be releasing this. You guys aren't going to want to miss this one, so make sure to tune back next week. Without further ado, here are the giveaway details for our monthly giveaway we do for the Goalie Hacks podcast. And just as a note here, if you enter into this giveaway, even if you don't win, we select four winners a month, and that includes books, different products, training products, NeuroTracker subscriptions. We give away all sorts of things. We pick four people a month. And even if you don't win 1 month, you're always entered into the future giveaway. So to enter the giveaway, if you're an Apple user, simply go to the Apple Podcast app on your phone and leave us a written review and rating. And if you're an Android user, you can also download iTunes onto your computer and leave a review and rating on there as well. And once you leave a review of the podcast, just take a screenshot of it and either email it to goaliehacks@gmail.com or DM me on Instagram with your screenshot and your full name. Get excited, guys. Great things ahead. I hope you guys enjoyed today's show, and I'll see you next week.